You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today I'm talking with Daniel Saure about 5 use cases for network meta-analysis you should absolutely know about. So stay tuned, and now some music. Now, over the years, we have created a lot of free content for you. All kind of different things about data visualization, about influencing, about whatsoever. And now we have collated all this content in one library for you to access. So head over to the Effective Statistician homepage, look for the library, you'll find it in our new homepage, and then sign up there and get access to all the content. And also future content will all post there. So go over to the Effective Statistician and sign up for that. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. Today, I'm talking to a good friend, Daniel. How are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. Thanks. I'm doing good. Very much looking forward to today's episode.
Yes. Today, we are talking about a really, really interesting topic, something that is kind of, and don't want to say haunting me, but following me for a very, very long time. And these are indirect treatment comparisons, and especially also network meta-analysis, and how we can all use these. I think there's very often only a very limited point of view on all the opportunities here. But before we delve into the kind of heavy methodological application part of this episode, Daniel, maybe you can introduce yourself a little bit.
Yes, thanks. So I'm Daniel. I'm located in Germany. So I'm a mathematician by training, and have been working for, I think, more than 10 years now in data science and medical biometry. I think, Alexander, we worked together for around 4 years for Eli Lilly in late phase statistics, medical phase affairs, HDA. And so last September, I joined Boehringer Ingelheim. So as a data scientist, and I'm still active in the HDA phase, and very much looking forward to today's episode. I think actually today it's already the second time I'm happy to be here. I think I had a look yesterday, so the first episode was about everything you need to know about matching adjusted indirect comparison. I think we recorded it almost 2 years ago, so
And you also participated in the 200th episode.
That's true.
So that means your episode was also quite successful. In terms of download numbers. So that's really good. And I'm pretty sure today will be another great one. So let's talk about, where we can all use network meta-analysis. And for sure, further things. But let's, for the moment, we'll focus on the medical affairs and HDA kind of applications. What's the first one where kind of, in the life cycle, where we will need to use network meta-analysis?
Yeah, I think the first one from a timing perspective also is that you compare your phase 2, phase 3 data with the competition. I think this is related to the clinical development phase. I think in this phase, your company is developing a new compound. So maybe in a new indication, maybe a line extension, or maybe even the first indication. And so how is this done usually? So you're running one or more than one RCTs, which are usually placebo-controlled or standard of care-controlled. And this information then is submitted to regulatory authorities. And beyond that, you might be interested in how your compound compares with the active competition. Yeah, I think your data or your trials tell you in terms of efficacy and safety, how do you compare versus standard of care? But if you want to go beyond, I think, yeah, indirect comparison and network meta-analysis are common methods, which then come into play. And yeah, this usually depends heavily on which competitor trials are already there. So which information you already have. So in some cases, you might be able to compare versus one other active treatment, depending on the market. In other cases, maybe you're entering an already big market, so then you already have a big amount of active treatments available. And then in that case, you might be able to even perform a network meta-analysis. Yeah,
completely agree. I think it's really important both internally and externally to frame your data. Yeah.
Yes.
And to show kind of how successful is it actually? Yeah. So of course, assuming that you have a positive phase 3 study or a positive phase 2 study, but how positive is it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, far better than than what's out there? Or is it kind of similar? In which extent is it better? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does it work faster? Is it, you know, creating higher levels of efficacy? Or is it even, you know, is it safer? Here it's really about differentiation.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're first to market, you're never really first to market. There's usually some kind of treatment out there and could be standard of care and could be different things here. And potentially even you could bring here in also some observational data if there is really no kind of established newer compounds. Yeah, so if all compounds that are currently used that maybe not be studied for particularly this indication and it's just kind of used for that in clinical practice. I think it's also important to go out there and proactively answer these questions, because otherwise we get into the second use case, and that is where you're maybe not the, you see a competitor actually, you know, publishing something. And then you are in the situation like, oh, there's this new drug and how's it doing against our drug? And maybe, you know, on first glance, it looks really, really good. And then I've seen more than once organization panicking. Yeah. They can think, oh, company XYZ has just published their results and they look so great. And you look into the kind of, you know, nuances of the methods and say, well, yes, if we would have done the same, we would also look pretty good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you can only do that if you then have, you know, indirect comparisons and all these kind of different things available.
Yeah, that's true. I completely agree. And I think what occurs in this case and also to the previous case is that everyone is comparing the results anyway. Yeah. So for example, if you go to a medical conference, so maybe there's a poster on treatment A showing response rate of 70% and then another poster of a different compound showing a response rate from 60%, and everyone is saying, oh, treatment A is 10% or has a 10% higher response rate, but this might be the case in reality. Yeah. And I think methods like indirect comparison and NMA really help here to give better estimates on this in case you don't have head-to-head data actually. Yeah. And yeah, so in coming back to this case, when you really compare the data to competitive data with your own product, I think you can really make use of all possibilities where new data can arrive. So this can be posters or presentations on conferences. It can be medical publications. It can be shown in HDA dossiers, which are open for the public. And I think here really it's again important to proactively identify the case and to prepare, and then you can really make a difference when you apply such methods.
Imagine kind of, you know, there is new, you know, presentation at a conference, and you have everything ready on your PC, and you basically just as you see the presentation type in the numbers from the slides. And directly after the presentation, you can, you know, show to your colleagues, well, we have just seen these kind of things. And this is how it looks in comparison to what we have. That can have an amazing impact. And that's where you can show and demonstrate your value to the organization. Mm-hmm. And this will help you to get a seat at the table. That will mm-hmm. help you to become more influential, become known for someone that is kind of has this competitive savviness and insights and can, you know, do these kind of things that lots of people actually don't understand.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, I think this is just another possibility where you can really help to inform, yeah, not only internal, but also external decision making, yeah, on your compound strategy. So, and yeah, coming back to your point, to get a seat on the table, I think this is really then where other functions are struggling, yeah, to do the next step based on new data. And I think you can really work together here proactively with medical, marketing, sales, and other functions to, yeah, to make a difference.
Yeah. One of the things is important. It's not, you know, you don't only need the data. You don't only need the results. What you also need to provide is training around the methods and explanations mm-hmm. around the method. What are the strengths? What are the limitations? Mm-hmm. What can you say based on your these network meta-analysis? What can't you say? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's always then important to be prepared and say, okay, here are our limitations in terms of, you know, these different design characteristics. And mm-hmm. that can bias in this direction or in that direction, you know, that makes it difficult to make this comparison or that comparison. These kind of training slides stuff you can have basically pre-prepared. Yeah. So mm-hmm. that when these questions come and they will come, that you have, you know, already answered that. Or potentially you have maybe even kind of discussed that before the data comes, that you know already the design of the other competition study. And because of that, you can say, okay, they will likely have better, worse, different results than what we have done.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the key here is really to plan for those activities.
Yeah.
Cross-functionally, not only in your department or function. I think obviously you need to plan for the resources, yeah, because this is something which is not, I think, not a standard activity across companies, probably this. And we are all busy anyway, but I think when you can really see the value of this, I think it's worth to do it and to plan accordingly for this. Yeah. And as you say, I think it's not about to push the button to run the analysis. I think it's really to come together cross-functionally even beforehand to identify the competitors that are of interest and to see which data you can use then or which data you expect actually. And then after you have the result, it's then really to draw conclusions of it. Yeah.
Yeah, completely agree. Okay. There's a third case where kind of you can get, you know, create this internal panic thing. And that is actually a case where it's much more difficult to be prepared for. What is this case?
Yeah, so this is, here's the case. Whenever you have published any kind of data, so through publications, through presentations at conferences, yeah, others can make use of it, yeah, in a good and in a bad way. So there are third parties, like, I don't know, medical guidelines or even the competition, who then, yeah, will have the possibility to incorporate your data into their own indirect comparisons or network meta-analysis. Yeah, and then it's really the question, what do you do if those findings are misleading or harming your product? Because I think one key aspect of indirect comparison or NMA is that you have consistency across results of indirect evidence and direct evidence, so from head-to-head trials. And if this is maybe not given, what do you do then? Yeah,
I have experienced that firsthand during a launch of a product where a couple of third parties were publishing network meta-analysis on a nearly quarterly basis. And whenever these come up, yeah, the companies that had the drugs that came out best was kind of then using that in their for their communications. Yeah. And here it's then of course important to be able to react fast. Yeah. That you can very fast say, okay, they have included these studies or excluded these studies. They have, you know, lumped up these kind of doses whatsoever, and have a kind of task force ready that can look into these kind of things, can provide strengths and limitations, can provide recommendations in terms of how to use that and all these different things. Yeah. So basically you need to have something like a communication cascade and communication plan ready for these situations, because they just create a lot of movement overall in the market and a lot of noise, especially when they come from kind of high profile organizations, like, I don't know, if you're the European Association of XYZ or the US, the American Association of XYZ, and they publish something like this, that usually has quite a lot of impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you need to answer then to those external publications. And how do you do this? Yeah, I think you can do it on the one hand in a qualitative way. Yeah, but maybe even better if you can come up with your own analysis, which maybe focus on other aspects and maybe even explains the differences you see. Yeah. So therefore, I think there are some possibilities you have to act then. And again, indirect comparisons and network meta-analysis, I think, play a key role then again in this case.
Yeah, you can show kind of, for example, by rerunning the analysis and changing some aspects of it, you can show how robust or how not robust they are. Okay, the fourth case is probably the most used one. And when we had a discussion among peers and a little bit of a survey across industry, that was by far the number one area. And we're pretty much, everybody needs to have it more or less by design.
Exactly. And this is about HTA submissions and payer negotiations, which is, I think, an external requirement when you look to HTA bodies worldwide. I think most of them accept and ask for indirect evidence in order to calculate then the price based on economic models. And this is a given. Yeah, after your regulatory approval, you need to submit to local HTA bodies or to payers in order to get market access and the price for your product. Yeah. And here again, indirect comparison network meta-analysis plays a crucial role for this. Yeah.
Yeah. And usually it's not just a report that you once produce and then it's done. Yeah. But very often you will have some kind of staggered approach in terms of launching products. Yeah. Maybe you go first with the UK or with Canada, and then, you know, you have maybe thereafter you have France and then Poland and, you know, lots of other countries around the world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And very often they will say, well, you need to have an updated systematic literature review each time. And so just for that reason, you need to update it. The other reason could be that they say, well, in our country, we have these, you know, guidelines, and therefore you could, you know, we only want to see this selection of treatments or only these doses or whatsoever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually live worked on this. I was joking with my colleague on, you know, the scientist that was responsible for this kind of, the NMA is never dying. It's kind of, it lives and needs to be re-updated again and again and again. I don't know how many versions we had in the end, but quite a lot.
Yeah, completely agree. Yeah, I think this is because when you look to the countries, they all have several or different requirements. So there is not one approach that fits all. And I think this won't change in future because, you know, there is this EU HTA process ongoing and starting in around 2 years, where you will need to submit EU dossier or an HTA dossier on EU level. So which will probably comprise several PICOs. So this also means then that you need to be ready to conduct several NMAs, so with different with different population, with different comparators in it, maybe based on different outcomes.
Yeah,
several times. And therefore, I think the situation we have now won't really change. And yeah, again, I think it's just important to have a good setup to do NMAs.
Yeah, PICO stands for Population Intervention, yeah. Comparator, and Outcomes.
Yeah, so, thanks.
A little bit of evidence synthesis vocabulary.
Yeah.
You know, the other point is, especially in areas where there is a lot of money involved, there is an incentive for HTA bodies to re-evaluate the market, because prices usually go down. And so after there's a couple of additional therapies entering the market, it can be easily occurring. There's a review of all these different drugs. And there's a reassessment.
Yeah.
And so that's the fifth place where you need to work on network meta-analysis.
Yeah, that's true. So I think once you're on the market, you really need to constantly update your evidence and re-evaluate it and provide it to HTA bodies to payers. Yeah, because the landscape is changing. Yeah. So on the one hand, as you have just said, there are new treatments will enter the market. So therefore, the data needs maybe will change. Maybe you create your new own data. So maybe long-term data, or you have an additional phase four trial running. So therefore, yeah, I think you do not only have difficulty to provide an NMA to local needs, but also changing needs over time.
Yeah. So it really makes sense to invest in training on NMAs.
Yeah.
It really makes sense to, if you outsource the networks meta-analysis, to work, with one partner that can help you do these kind of things in a consistent way, in a fast way, again and again and again. Because as we just walked through these five cases where you need to work on network meta-analysis, and these just five cases, that doesn't mean that you do the NMA five times.
Yep.
You could do it kind of 20 times or 30 times. So there is, again and again, these kind of things happen. And it starts already, while you're in clinical development. Because, of course, you can also use it to inform your study design. And
yep.
I know many, many companies do that. Okay, very good. So the five cases were, first, understand your phase two, phase three data. The second, understand competitive data. Third, critique published network meta-analysis. And the fourth and fifth, HTA submissions and re-evaluations by HTA bodies. Daniel, a great episode again. What are kind of your key takeaways?
Yeah, thanks. I think the key takeaway really is that NMAs, indirect comparisons, are an important tool, not only in development phase, but maybe especially in late phase, so including HTA and medical affairs work.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to plan for those kind of analysis, and this not only in your function, but in a cross-functional manner. So I think all the relevant functions need to be on board. What might be the value of this analysis? What might be the consequences? I think you really need to show how this analysis can help to drive business decisions internally, but also externally. And yeah, I think the last point is that you need to have in place good routine to train on this, because in this phases we were talking about, it's not only you who can run those analysis, but there are several others, your competition, third parties, who can run the same kind of analysis. And this is very likely to get tricky over time when you have 10 published NMAs with maybe the same set of treatments and different results. Then I think you need to put in a lot of effort to really understand those differences and to help others what to do with it.
Yeah, completely agree. Having a good training communication piece in there is absolutely critical. And finally, it also gives you an awesome opportunity to increase your influence. One of the reoccurring topics of
that's
the podcast.
True.
Thanks so much for the great discussion. Really enjoyed it. And we'll surely speak again on this podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me again.
I really hope you enjoyed this podcast episode with Daniel. I certainly did. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com to find the library of all the free resources. Don't forget about this. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and Casey who helped with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.